Usha, Sufis, the People of the Past, Volume 2, Talks on Sufism, given at the Usha Commune International, Pune, India, Discourse Number 1.
Bhagwan, there was once a woman who abandoned the religion in which she had been brought up. She left the ranks of the atheists, too, and joined another faith. Then she became convinced of the truth of yet another. Each time she changed her beliefs, she imagined that she had gained something, but not quite enough. Each time she entered a new fold, she was welcomed, and her recruitment was regarded as a good thing, and a sign of her sanity and enlightenment. Her inward state, however, was one of confusion. At length, she heard of a certain celebrated teacher, Imam Jafar Sadiq, and she went to see him. After he had listened to her protestations and ideas, he said, "Return to your home. I shall send you my decision in a message." Soon afterwards, the woman found a disciple of the sheikh at the door. In his hand was a packet from the master. She opened it and saw that it contained a glass bottle, half full with three layers of packed sand, black, red, and white, held down by a wad of cotton. On the outside was written, "Remove the cotton and shake the bottle to see what you are like." She took the wadding out and shook the sand in the bottle. The different colored grains of sand mixed together, and all that she was left with was a mass of grayish sand.
Man is a paradox, and man is the only animal, only being who is paradoxical. That is man's uniqueness, man's special being, is his innermost paradox. All other animals are non-paradoxical. A tree is a tree, and a dog is a dog. But man is never in a state of isness. He is always beginning, growing. Man is always surpassing himself. That is his paradox. And it is at his very core of being. It is not accidental. It is very fundamental. Once you understand this paradox, you have your first glimpse about humanness. What man is. Man is always a project, a beginning. His being consists of beginning. This is the paradox. He is always between that which he was and that which he is going to be. He is always between his past and future. A bridge hanging between two eternities, the past and the future. A surpassing, a continuous surpassing. Man is never content with that which he is. trying to go beyond. Always trying to go beyond. Whatsoever he is doing, all his effort basically is how to become something more, something higher, something better. Man is a progress, a wayfarer, a pilgrim, and his life a pilgrimage, a non-ending pilgrimage that goes on and on. A dog is born, a tree is born. The tree is born with all its treeness, and the dog is born with all its dogness. Man is not a given fact. Man is born only with a possibility, with a potential. Man is born as blank, as nothingness. Nothing is written. All other beings have a certain essence, a certain soul. In man, it is just the reverse. His existence comes first, and then he starts seeking for his essence. In other animals, essence comes first, then existence. They already bring a built-in program. They never grow. They remain the same. That's why they look so innocent, so unworried, so non-tense. Look in the eyes of a cow. How peaceful, calm, tranquil. No anxiety, no anguish, no clouds. Look into the eyes of a man. They are always cloudy. They have always anguish. There is always trembling. The trembling whether I am going to make it or not. The trembling whether I will be able to find myself or not. The trembling whether I will be fulfilled or remain unfulfilled. The animals are at ease, relaxed. Man is at tension. This is his glory, and this is his anguish too. This is his dignity, and this is his problem too. His glory, because he is capable of creating himself, he is a god. And anguish, because the possibility is always there that he may fail. He may not be able to create himself. Who knows? Glory because of freedom. He has not been programmed. The only animal who remains without a program. He has not been given a map. He has not been ordered. Man is the only being who is uncommanded, with no orders. He comes into existence empty, and then he starts groping for his being. Then he starts groping and creating and searching. Man is an adventure. But with the adventure, uncertainty, insecurity, failure, fear. One can always go wrong. More possibility of going wrong, less possibility of being right. There are 1001 ways Which one is the right? Always answer. And whatsoever you choose in uncertainty. Because you can never be certain whether this path will lead to your goal or will end in a cul-de-sac somewhere. Will be reaching anywhere or will just end in a desert. Man's glory is his freedom, that he can create himself. He can be himself. Nothing is forced on him. He is open-ended. And man's misery, because he cannot be certain, can never be certain that he is on the right path, that whatsoever he is doing is meaningful or not. Man is the only animal who goes mad. He has problems to face, to solve, to grow beyond them. This is the first thing I would like you to understand. There has been a great Sufi master, one of the greatest of all the ages, Al-Ghazali. He says, on the path of human growth, from man to God, from man the potential to man the actual, from possibility to reality, there are seven valleys. These seven valleys are of immense importance. Try to understand them, because you will have to pass those seven valleys. Everybody has to pass those seven valleys. If you understand rightly what to do with a valley, you will be able to go beyond it and you will attain to a peak. Because each valley is surrounded by mountains. If you can pass through the valley, if you don't get entangled in the valley, if you don't get lost in the valley, if you don't become too much attached with the valley, if you remain aloof, detached, a witness, and if you keep on remembering that this is not your home, that you are a stranger here, and you go on remembering that the peak has to be reached, and you don't forget the peak, you will reach to a peak. Each valley crossed, there is great celebration. But after each valley, you have to enter into another valley. This goes on. There are seven valleys. Once you have reached the seventh, then there is no more. Then man has attained to his being. He is no more paradoxical. There is no tension, no anguish. This is what we have called in the East Buddhahood. This is what Christians call the state of being a Christ. This is what Jainas called Jinnahood, of becoming victorious. There are many names. But the basic idea is that unless man becomes a God, he remains in anxiety. And to become God, these seven valleys have to be crossed. And each valley has its own allurements. It is very, very possible that you may get attached to something and you will not be able to leave the valley. And you have to leave it if you want to enter to the second. And after each valley there is a peak, a great mountain peak. And after each valley there is a jubilation. And the jubilation goes on becoming intenser and intenser. And then finally in the seventh valley, you attain to the cosmic orgasm. You disperse. Then only God is. Listen to these seven valleys and try to understand them. And don't think Al-Ghazali is talking anything philosophical. Sufis are not interested in philosophy at all. They are very practical people. If they say something, they mean. If they say something, it is said for the seekers, not for those curious ones, not for intellectuals, but for those who are on the path, really working hard to have a glimpse of the truth. It is for the seekers. The first valley. The first valley is called the valley of knowledge. Literally, knowledge has to be the first. Because man starts by knowing. No other animal has knowledge. Only man knows. Only man collects knowledge. Only man writes, reads, talks. Only man has language, scriptures, theories. So knowledge has to be the first valley. The negative part of the valley is that you can become knowledgeable. You can get hooked into knowledge. You can forget the real purpose of knowing and you can become attached to knowledge itself. Then you will be accumulating more and more knowledge and you can go for lives together accumulating knowledge. You will become a great scholar, a pundit, but you will not become a knower. The way of the knower is utterly different from the way of knowledge. There are two things when knowledge happens. The content of knowledge. You know something. And the consciousness. The mirror. You. Who knows? If you become too much attached with the content of knowledge rather than with the capacity of knowing, you will be lost in the valley. I will call that part negative, which can make you entangled, hooked, attached. If you become knowledgeable, then you are lost. You could not cross the first valley. And more knowledge you have, more confused you will become. Because there is no way to decide what is true. Everything that you hear, if rightly put before you, logically placed before you, will look right. There is no other way for you to decide. There is no criterion. That's why it goes on happening. You go to one master and you hear him and he looks right. Then you go to another master and you hear him and he looks right. You read one book and it looks right. You read another book, maybe just the opposite, and that too has its own logic and that looks right. There is no way to decide who is right. And if you go on accumulating, you will go on accumulating contradictions, opposite statements, and there are millions of spin points. and sooner or later you will become just a crowd of many philosophies and systems. And that is not going to help. That will become the greatest hindrance. So the first thing is, in the valley of knowledge, one has to remain alert that one has to be emphatically concerned with the capacity of knowing and not with the object, not with the content. One should emphasize witnessing. One should become more and more alert and aware, then one becomes a knower. Not by knowing many things, but by just becoming more aware, one becomes really a knower. The path of knowledge has nothing to do with his scriptures, opinions, systems, beliefs. It has something to do with the capacity to know. You can know. You have this immense energy of being conscious. So be concerned with the container, the consciousness, and not be concerned with the content. Don't be concerned with the known, be concerned with the knower. Knowledge is a double-arrowed phenomenon. One arrow points to the known, another arrow points to the knower. If you go on looking to the known, you will be lost in the valley. If you start looking to the knower, you cannot be lost. You will be able to transcend the valley. And once you transcend the valley of knowledge, there is great, great joy. Because you have understood something very essential in you. Something that is going to remain to the very end. Something that is very fundamental. The capacity to know. The capacity to be conscious. So if you look at the knower, if you become more alert of the knower, you have used the positive. The second valley is called the valley of the repentance. When you start looking who you are, naturally, great repentance arises, because all that you have done wrong, all that you have done and would not have been done, you start feeling repentance. So a great peak comes with consciousness, but suddenly with consciousness arises conscience. Remember, the conscience that you have is not the true conscience, it is a pseudo coin. It is given by the society. People have told you what is right and what is wrong, what is moral, what is immoral. You don't know exactly what is moral and what is immoral. But crossing the first valley, you will be able to know exactly what is right and what is wrong. And then suddenly, you will see what wrong you have done. How many people you have been hurting. How sadistic you have been with others. How masochistic you have been with yourself. How destructive, violent, aggressive, angry, jealous you have been up to now. All that will come to your vision. That is the natural byproduct of becoming conscious. Conscience arises. And this conscience has nothing to do with the ordinary conscience that you have. That is borrowed. So you can have it and still it does not hurt. It does not give real pain so that you can be transformed through it. You know what is right, so only. And you go on doing the wrong. you go and do whatever you want to do, your knowledge of the right does not create any difference in you. You know anger is bad, but you remain angry. On one hand, you know anger is bad. On another hand, there is no problem. You continue to be angry. On one hand, you know pajasuness is not good. And on the other hand, you go on holding. You go on possessing. Not only things, but even persons you start possessing. You possess your wife, your husband, your children, as if they are things, as if they can be possessed. You destroy through your possessiveness, and you know it is wrong. This borrowed conscience does not help. It simply burdens you with first valley crossed, your own conscience arises. Now you know exactly what is wrong, and it becomes impossible to do otherwise. This is the point where Socratic dictum becomes meaningful, that knowledge is virtue. Now the negative part of the valley of repentance. The negative part is that you may become too much worried about the guilt concerning the past, that you have done this wrong and that wrong, and you have been doing millions of wrong. You have been here unconscious for so long that if you start counting all that, it will create a kind of morbidity. You will become so guilty that rather than growing, you will fall into great darkness. So if guilt arises and you become morbid and you become too much troubled with the past, you will remain in the second valley. You will not be able to surpass it. If past becomes too much important, then naturally you will be continuously crying and weeping and beating your chest and saying, what wrong I have been doing. The positive part is, you should become concerned with the future, not with the past. Yes, you have noted it, that you have been wrong, but that was natural because you were unconscious. So there is no need to feel guilty. How one can be right when one was unconscious? You have taken note of it, that your whole past has been wrong, but it does not create a burden on your chest. You take note of it, that taking note helps you because you will not be able to do it again. You are finished with it. You feel sad that so many people you have been hurting in so many ways, but you feel joyous also simultaneously because now it will not be happening anymore. You are freed from past and guilt. You don't become concerned about it. You become concerned with the future, the new opening. Now you have your own conscience. Now the future is going to be totally different, qualitatively different, radically different. You will be thrilled with the adventure. Now you have your own conscience, and your conscience will never allow you again to do the wrong. And not that you will have to control. When the real conscience has arisen, there is no need to control, no need to discipline. The right becomes the natural thing. Then the easy is the right and the right is the easy. In fact, once the conscience has arisen in you, if you want to do wrong, you will have to make great effort to do it. And even then, there is not much possibility of succeeding. Without your own conscience, you have to do much effort to be right, and even then you don't succeed. So one is thrilled. One feels sad for the past, but is no more burdened, because past is no more. That is the positive part, that one should feel that the transformation has happened, that the blessing has arrived, that God has given you the greatest gift of conscience. Now your life will move on a totally new dimension, on a new track. This is where real morality is born, virtue, sila. The third valley is called the valley of stumbling blocks. Once the conscience has arisen, now you will be able to see how many blocks exist. You have eyes to see how many hindrances are there. There are walls upon walls, there are doors too, but they are far and few in between. You will be able to see all the stumbling blocks. Al-Ghazali says there are four. One, the tempting world, the world of things. They are very much fascinating. Lust is created. Why? All the world religions have been saying that one has to go beyond the temptation of the world. Because if you are too much tempted with the world and you hanker too much for the worldly things, you will not have enough energy to desire God. Your desire will be wasted into things. A man who wants to have a big house, a big balance in the bank, great power in the world and prestige, puts his all desiring, invests all his desiring into the world. Nothing is left to seek God. Things are not bad in themselves. Sufis are not against things, remember. Sufis say things are good in themselves. But one who has started seeking for God and the ultimate truth cannot afford. You have a certain quality and certain quantity of energy. The whole energy has to be put in one desire. All the desires have to become one desire. Only then God can be attained. Only then you can surpass this third valley. Ordinarily, we have many desires. The religious person is one who has only one desire, whose all desires have fallen into one big desire. Just like small rivers, small streams, tributaries fall and become the big Ganges. Like that, a religious person is one whose all desires have become one desire, and he desires only God. He desires only transcendence. So the first, the tempting world. Second, peoples, attachments with peoples. Sufis are, again, remember, not against peoples. But they say one should not become attached to people. Otherwise that very attachment will become a hindrance, a stumbling block to God. Be with your woman and be with your man. Be with your children. Be with your friends. But remember, we are all strangers here. And our togetherness is just accidental. We are travelers. We have met on the road. For a few days maybe we will be together. Feel thankful for that. But sooner or later, ways part. your wife dies. She goes on her own way. And you will never know where. Or your wife falls into love with somebody else and ways pass. Or you fall in love with somebody else. Your son has become grown up and he takes his life in his own hands and moves away from you. Every son has to move from the parents. We are on this road for a few days only together, and our being together is just accidental. It is not going to be forever. So be with people, be lovingly with people, be compassionately with people, but don't become attached. Otherwise your attachment will not allow you freedom enough to go beyond. So the second is people, attachments. The third, Al-Ghazali called Shaitan. And the fourth, the ego. By Shaitan is meant the mind. The mind that you have accumulated in the past. Although conscience has arisen, although you have become more conscious than ever, but the mechanism of the mind is still there, lurking by the sides. It will lurk still a little longer. It has been with you for so long that it cannot leave you suddenly. It takes time. And it waits and watches. If some opportunity is there, it will jump immediately and take possession of you. It has been your master. You have functioned as a slave. The mind cannot accept that you have become a master so suddenly. It takes time for the mind. It is a mechanism. It is always there. For the seekers, the mind is the devil. All the stories about the devil are nothing but about the mind. The devil is just a mythological name for the mind, or as Sufis call devil, Satan. When the devil tempts Jesus, do you think some devil is there, is standing outside? Don't be foolish. There is no devil standing outside. The temptation is coming from Jesus' own mind. The mind says, now you have become so miraculously powerful. Why bother about other things? Why not have the kingdom of the whole world? You can have it. It is just within your reach. You can possess the whole world. You have so much power. You are so spiritually high. Your siddhis are released. You can have all the money and all the prestige that you want. Why bother about God and religion? Use this possibility. Mind is tempting. And when Jesus says, don't come in my way, go away, he is not talking to some devil outside. He is simply saying to the mind, please don't come in my way. I am no more concerned with the desires that you have. I am no more concerned with the projects that you have. I am on a totally different journey. You know nothing about it. You keep quiet. And the fourth is ego. One of the greatest stumbling blocks on the path of seeking. When you start becoming a little conscious, your conscience arises and you start seeing the stumbling blocks. A great ego from nowhere suddenly takes possession of you, that I am become a saint, a sage. I am no more ordinary. I am extraordinary. And the problem is that you are extraordinary. It is true. So the ego can prove it. That is the greatest problem. Because ego is not just talking nonsense. It is sensible. It is exactly so. Still, one has to be alert that if you get entangled with the ego, with the idea that I am extraordinary, then you will be remaining always in the third valley. You will never be able to reach the fourth. And the fourth will bring more flowers and higher peaks and greater joys, and you will miss. This is the place where siddhis, spiritual powers, become the most hindering thing. The negative part is to start fighting with these stumbling blocks. If you start fighting, you will be lost in the valley. There is no need to fight. Don't create enmity. Just understanding is enough. Fighting means repression. You can repress the ego. You can repress your attachment to people. You can repress your lust for things. And you can repress your shaitan, your mind. But the repressed will remain. And you will not be able to enter in the fourth valley. In the fourth valley, only those enter who have no repression. So don't start repressing. The positive part is, take the challenge. That the ego is challenging you. Don't take it as an enmity. Rather, as a challenge to go beyond. Don't fight with it. Understand it. Look deep into it. Look into the mechanism of it, how it functions, how this new ego is arising in you, how this mind goes on playing games with you, how you become attached to people, how you become attached to things. Look into the how of it with cool observation, no antagonism. In any way, if you become antagonistic, then you are caught. If you become indulgent, you are caught. If you become antagonistic, you are caught. And those two look the easiest things. And people know only two things. Either they know become friends, or they know become the enemy. That is the only ordinary possible understanding. The third thing will help. Be watchful, witnessing, neither inimical nor friendly. Be indifferent. Just see they are there. Because if you take any feeling attitude for or against, all kinds of feelings become bondages. Feeling means you become attached. Remember, you are attached to your enemies also as you are attached to your friends. If your enemy will die, you will miss him as much as you will miss your friend, sometimes even more. Because he was giving some meaning to your life. Fighting with him, you were enjoying a trip. Now he is no more. The ego that was being fulfilled by fighting with him will never be fulfilled again. You will have to find a new enemy. So don't make enemies and don't make friends. Just see. Be very, very scientifically observant. That is the positive thing to do. Explore what ego is and explore joyously. Explore what lust is. And explore joyously. Then comes the fourth valley, the valley of tribulations. Entry into the unconscious happens in the fourth valley. Up to now, you were confined into the world of the conscious. Now, for the first time, you will enter into the deeper realms of your being, the unconscious. The darker past. the night part. Up to now, you were in the day part. It was easier. Now things will become more difficult. The higher you go, more you have to pay. With each higher step, the journey becomes more arduous, and the fall becomes more dangerous. And one has to be more alert. On each step, more awareness will be needed, because you will be moving on higher planes. The valley of tribulations, it is the entry into the unconscious. It is the entry what Christian mystics have called the dark night of the soul. It is the entry into the mad world that you are hiding behind yourself. It is very weird. It is very bizarre. Up to the third, a man can proceed without a master, but not beyond the third. Up to the third, one can go on one's own. With the fourth, master is a must. And when I am saying up to the third one can go, I don't mean that one has to go. And I don't mean that everybody will be able to go. I am simply talking of a theoretical possibility. Up to the third, it is theoretically possible that the man can go without a master. But with the fourth, the master becomes an absolute necessity. Because now you will be sinking into darkness. You don't have any light of your own yet that you can use in that darkness. Somebody else's light will be needed. Somebody who has gone into that dark night and for whom it has become possible to see in that darkness. The negative part of the valley of tribulations is doubt. Great doubt will arise. You don't know what doubt is. You don't know yet. All that you think is doubt is nothing but skepticism. It is not doubt. Doubt is an altogether different phenomenon. Somebody says God is, you say I doubt. You don't doubt. How can you doubt? You are only being skeptical. You are only saying that I don't know. Rather than saying I don't know, you are using a very strong word, doubt. How can you doubt? Doubt is possible when you are facing a reality. For example, you have never seen a ghost. And you say, I doubt the existence of ghosts. That is not doubt, that is just being skeptical. You are simply saying, I have never come across, so how I can believe? I doubt. That is not doubt. Doubt will be one day passing through the cemetery, suddenly you come across a ghost. Then your whole being will be shaken. Then you will be for the first time in a stage where doubt arises whether that which you are facing is true or an hallucination. Doubt is very existential. Skepticism is intellectual. Skepticism is only in the mind. Doubt enters into your very being. Your whole body, mind, soul, your totality is shaken. In this dark night of the soul, the fourth valley, doubt arises. Doubt about God. Because you were seeking for more light, and this has happened just the opposite. You were seeking for more bliss, and you have fallen in the dark night. A great doubt arises whether you are going right, whether this seeking is worth, because you were seeking for gold. You were seeking for great light and great enlightenment and nirvana and samadhi and satori. And instead of satori and samadhi, this dark night has overwhelms you. Even those lives that used to be there are no more there. Even those certainties that used to be there are no more there. You used to know certain things. Now you know nothing. You had some security. Even that is gone. The very earth underneath your feet has slipped away. You are drowning. Then doubt arises. Then one starts feeling that maybe this whole religious trip is nonsense. Maybe there is no God. Maybe I was befooling myself. Maybe I have chosen something absurd. It was better to live in the world, to be of the world. It was better to have many more things, to enjoy power, to enjoy sex, to enjoy money. What I have done, I have lost all, and this is the result. To every seeker this moment comes. And if this doubt arises, then naturally one starts defending oneself against the darkness. One creates an armor around oneself against the darkness. The invading darkness, one has to protect oneself. If you do that, you will be thrown back again to the conscious part of your mind. You will miss the mystery of darkness. Light is beautiful, but nothing to be compared with darkness. Darkness is more beautiful, more cooling, more deep. Darkness has depth, light is shallow. And unless you are able to welcome darkness, you will not be able to welcome death. So first teaching that you have to accept, welcome, relax. This darkness is the first glimpse of God. It is dark. Later on you will understand it was not dark. It was really for the first time you had opened your eyes towards God, and it was too dazzling. That's why it looked dark. It was not dark. Darkness was your interpretation. Look at the sun for a few seconds and soon you will be surrounded by darkness. It is too much. You cannot bear it. A man can go blind looking too long at the sun. Look at the sun for a few seconds and then go into your house and you will find the whole house full of darkness. Just a moment before you were there and everything you could see, now you cannot see anything. You will stumble upon things. It is interpretation that it is dark, but it is natural. Later on, when you have transcended the valley, then you will be able to look back and see the reality. Only a master can hold your hands into this dark night of soul and can make you confident, can say to you and convince to you, don't be worried. It only looks dark. It is not dark. It is the first meeting of God. You are coming closer. These are three things to be understood. Sleep, death, and samadhi. Sleep is like death. In the East we say it is the small death, tiny death. We die every night and disappear into the dark night. Then comes death, a bigger sleep, a bigger death than sleep. The body disappears, but the mind remains and is born again. Then comes the ultimate death, samadhi, where body disappears and mind disappears. And only the innermost core consciousness remains. That is the ultimate death. In the fourth valley, you encounter the first glimpse of how ultimate death is going to happen to you. If you reject it, if you defend yourself against it, if you create an armor, you will be thrown back to the third valley. And you will miss. And once you have missed the fourth, you will always remain afraid to go again into it. My observation about people is that people who have entered in the fourth sometime in their past life and have become too much frightened and escaped from it are the people who are always afraid of anything deeper. Love and they will be afraid. Orgasm and they will be afraid. Friendship and only so far. Beyond that they will be afraid. Discipleship and they will be afraid. Surrender and they will be afraid. Prayer, they will be afraid. They will be afraid of all those things that can again bring them to that fourth valley. They may not be consciously aware why they are afraid. The fourth valley is very important because it's just in the middle. There are seven valleys. Fourth is just in the middle. Three are on this side and three on that side. Fourth is immensely significant. It is the bridge. The master is needed on this bridge. Because you pass from the known to the unknown. From the finite to the infinite. From the trivial to the profound. The positive part is trust, surrender. The negative part is doubt, defense. The master starts teaching you about trust and surrender from the very beginning. So that by and by, it becomes your climate because it will be needed. When you will enter in the fourth valley. Sometimes people come to me and they say, why can't we be here without surrendering? Why can't we meditate and listen to you and be benefited as much as we want? What is the point of surrendering? They don't understand. In the beginning, it may not look very relevant. Why? For what? You can listen to me without surrendering. And you can meditate here without surrendering. You can pass through growth groups without surrendering. It seems perfectly okay. Surrendering seems to be not needed at all. But you don't know what is going to happen in future. For that, preparation has to be made right now. You cannot wait for that moment. If preparation has not been done before, then you will miss. Then when the right time comes, your house is on fire and you have not dug the well yet. And you start digging it. But by the time it will be ready, the house will be gone. One has to dig the well before the house catches fire. So right now it may not seem relevant. I can understand logically it is not relevant right now. Listening to me, what surrender is needed? Meditating, what surrender is needed? But in the fourth valley when you will enter, surrender will be needed. And suddenly you cannot learn the ways of surrender. You have to go on learning them before the need arises. Surrender has to become your climate. The fifth valley, the thundering valley. In the fifth valley you enter into death. In the fourth you enter into sleep, into darkness. In the fifth you enter into death. Or if you like to use modern terminology for it. In the fourth, you enter into the personal unconscious. In the fifth, you enter into the collective unconscious. Great fear arises because you are losing your individuality. In the fourth, you were losing light, day, but you were there. In the fifth, you are losing yourself. You don't feel as if you are. You are dispersing. You are melting. Your feeling that I am a center, it starts becoming vague, cloudy. Entry into death, entry into the collective unconscious, great fear arises, great anguish is felt, the greatest anguish that you will ever feel. Because here is the question, to be or not to be. You are disappearing. Your whole being will hanker to be. You would like to go back to the fourth. It was dark, but at least it was good. You were there. No, the darkness has become more dense. Not only that, you are disappearing into it. Soon, not even a trace will be left of you. The negative part is clinging to the self. That's why great teachers, Buddha or Jalaluddin Rumi, they insist, remember, no self, anatta. Sufis call it fana. One disappears. And one should prepare for this disappearance. One should be ready, not only ready, but in a deep welcome. It is going to bring great joy, because all your misery is contained in your ego. The very idea that I am is your ignorance. The very idea that I am creates all kinds of anxieties for you and problems. The ego is the hell. Jayapal Sartre has said, the hell is other people. That is not right. The hell is you. The hell is the ego. If other people feel to be the hell, they also feel to be the hell because of the ego, because they hurt it continuously. They go on pushing your buttons. Because you have this wound of the ego, everybody seems to hurt you. It is just your idea that I am special, and when somebody does not recognize it, it gives pain. When you don't have any idea of being special, what Zen people call become ordinary. If you become ordinary, then this valley can be crossed. If you become nobody, then easily this valley can be crossed. So the negative part is clinging to the self, and the positive part is relaxing into no self, into nothingness. Being ready to die, willingly, joyously, voluntarily. Then comes the sixth valley, the abysmal valley. One disappears. In the fifth, one was disappearing. In the sixth, one is no more. One is a memory of the past. One disappears. In the fifth, one was entering into death. In the sixth, death has happened. One has died. One is no more. That's why it is called abysmal valley, the most painful, because this is the sixth, last but one. One passes in the greatest pain of not being, of nothingness. One cannot believe it. Because in a certain sense one is, and in a certain sense one is no more. The paradox has come to the ultimate peak. One is and one is not. One can see one's own corpse. One is dead. And still one knows that one is seen. So one must be somewhere, in some sense. All the past ideas of the self has become irrelevant. A new idea of self arises. Death happens, one disappears. This is what Christians call crucifixion. Nothingness has arrived. One is just an empty sky. Hindus call it samadhi. Zen people call it satori. The negative part is complaining. It will be good to remind you. Jesus on the crucifixion shows both attitudes. First he complains. He looks at the sky and said, Why you have forsaken me? Why you have abandoned me? This is the negative part. He is complaining. He is dying and no help is arriving. He is on the cross. And deep down somewhere, a lurking desire must have been that God's hand will arise and everything will be okay and the cross will become a crown and he will descend with new glory. Somewhere, a lurking desire in the very unconscious core of his mind must have been. He may not have been aware of it. He has waited long enough. The last point has come. He has carried his cross on the hills. He has suffered all kind of humiliation. But he has waited, patiently waited. Waited for this moment. Now his hands have been nailed. Now it is a question of seconds and he will be gone. Now there is no time left to wait anymore. And the help has not come. And the God is not visible. Hence the cry, why you have forsaken me? Why have you abandoned me? This is the negative part. It is natural, even natural to a man like Jesus. The positive part is deep gratitude. If you think of your past, then complain that I have been doing all that was asked me to do, all that you have ordered to do. I have followed you blindly. And this is the result? This is the fulfillment? And the second positive part, forgetting the past, one looks into the future and one trusts the last test has come. the ultimate test. And one feels grateful that if this is your will, let it be done. That's what Jesus did. He showed both the attitudes, first the negative, which is very human. I love Jesus because he showed that. He was very human. That's why you used to say again and again that I am Son of Man. As many times he says I am Son of God, he says I am Son of Man. He was eternity come into time. He was the beyond come into the world. He belonged to the world and the beyond both. That's how each master belongs to both. His one feet is in the world, his another feet is in the other. And on the crucifixion day, in that moment, where all is disappearing, he shows both the attitudes. First he shows the attitude of being Son of Man. He says, why? Why you have abandoned me? I have hoped. I have prayed. I have lived a life of virtue. And this is the fulfillment. And this is the reward. But then he immediately understands that he is missing the point. If this is the will of God, then this has to be so. He surrenders. Positive is gratitude, surrender. And immediately he says, the immediate statement, after why you have abandoned me, he recognizes his complaint, his humanity. He must have laughed in that moment. He must have seen his limitation as a human being. And he dropped it. And he said, thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. Gratitude has arisen. Surrender is total. Now there is no more. Jesus dies as Son of God. And the gap is very, very tiny. Just in a split second, he changes from being man into God. The moment complaint changes into trust, you change from human into God. He becomes prayer. Thy will be done. Now he is no more. Now he has no will of his own. And then comes the seventh valley, which is the last, the ultimate. The valley of hymns, the valley of celebration, rebirth, resurrection happens in the seventh valley. That is the meaning of the Christian idea of resurrection, that Christ is reborn. Reborn in the body of glory, reborn in the body of light. Reborn in the body divine. Now there is no positive, no negative. Now there is no duality. One is one. Unity has arisen. What Hindus call Advaita. The dual has disappeared. One has come home. The valley of the hymns, Al-Ghazali has given it a beautiful name. Now there is nothing left, just a song of celebration, praise of God, utter joy. This is what I call the ultimate orgasm. If I was going to name these valleys, I will call it the valley of total orgasm. only celebration is left. When his flower blooms, the fragrance is released. Now there is nowhere to go. Man has become that for which he was seeking, searching, struggling. Man is a paradox. He is not what he is. He is that which he is not yet. But the day you will realize the ultimate, you will have a laugh arising in your very heart. Because then you will know you were always this, just it was unknown to you. The future was contained in you, just hidden. You had to discover it. These seven valleys are the valleys of discovery. This is a beautiful map. This is the Sufi map. Now, this is story. There was once a woman who abandoned the religion in which she had been brought up. She left the ranks of the atheists too and joined another faith. Then she became convinced of the truth of yet another. Each time she changed her beliefs, she imagined that she had gained something, but not quite enough. Each time she entered a new fold, she was welcomed, and her recruitment was regarded as a good thing and a sign of her sanity and enlightenment. Her inward state, however, was one of confusion. This woman was lost in the first valley, the valley of knowledge, and she got hooked with the negative. She became knowledgeable. She went to this school and to that. She went to this teacher and to that. She studied this doctrine and that. And each time she will start something new, she will be thrilled. It will be a kind of honeymoon. And sooner or later, she will be fed up with it. And she will start moving and searching again. The total result was that she gathered much knowledge of diverse natures, of contradictory systems. All those systems work, remember. Never forget it. Each system works, but it works in its purity only. If you mix it with many systems, it will never work. It will be like few parts you take from a Mercedes Benz, and few parts from a Rolls Royce, and few parts from a Chevrolet, and few parts from a Porsche, and few parts from a truck, and few parts from somewhere else, and you put them together. They all are useful, but this mechanism that you have created out of them is not going to work. A part that was functioning in a certain mechanism will not function, will not be able to function with other kinds of parts. Each system is an organic whole. It is complete in itself. If you listen to Mahavira and find out few beautiful thoughts, and then you go to Buddha and listen and find out few beautiful thoughts, and you make a concoction, a khichdi, and you will become confused. And those fragments that you have taken from Mahavir were beautiful, but they belong to a certain system. They were organic parts of a certain whole. They can function only in that whole. They cannot function with anything Buddhist. And the Buddhist fragments are beautiful, but only in a Buddhist system. Now this woman became more and more confused. And this woman is very representative of many people. Many people here also, who have been going to this teacher and that, and to this system and that, and go on gathering. And they think just by gathering few wise statements, they are going to become wise. They are utter fools. They will simply go mad. Each system is perfect and works, but don't mix it with anything else. Let it function in its own. Now this woman abandoned the religion in which she had been brought up. Then she became an atheist. She abandoned religion itself. Then she joined another faith. She abandoned atheism too. And then she became convinced of the truth of yet another. And each time she changed her belief, she imagined that she had gained something, but not quite enough. She was just collecting fragments, wise sayings. These wise sayings look wise, may be useful to the system from which they have been taken, but become useless the moment you take them out. It is said of a Hindu mystic that he went begging, and a woman looked at his eyes, and he had beautiful eyes. Saints have beautiful eyes. Nobody can have eyes like a saint. The depth, the joy, the feeling that one has arrived, the relaxation, the rest, the compassion. The woman became immensely attracted to the eyes. She started following the mystic. One day the mystic asked, "What is the matter? Why you go on following me?" "Because I don't see any religious search in you," the woman confessed. She said, "In fact, I don't have anything to do with religion. I have simply become attracted to your eyes. You have beautiful eyes." The mystic said, "You go home. Tomorrow I will come to your home." She was very happy. She thought the mystic is also interested in her. She took a bath, perfumed her body, decorated with flowers, cleaned the whole house. With great expectation and hope she was waiting, and then came the mystic. She could not believe. He had taken his eyes out, and he has brought those eyes in a plate. And he said, "You keep them. You unnecessarily have to follow me. You keep these eyes. You can have them. I don't have much use, because whatsoever I needed to see, I have seen. And this doesn't look good that you go on following me just because of these eyes. You keep them. But are these eyes any more eyes? They are no more eyes. They were eyes only when they were in the organic unity of the body. Now they are nothing. Now you can see into them, you will not find any depth. You can see into them, you will not find any compassion and any love. There is nothing. They are just ordinary people. Meaningless. The meaning is always in totality. So never think that you can become wise by collecting wise sayings. That is not possible. In this age, many people have tried that. In India, Mahatma Gandhi was trying that. Take few things from the Quran and few things from the Bible, and few things from the Gita, and few things from Dhammapada, and collect them and make a concoction that he used to call the synthesis of all religions. This is just meaningless. You cannot create a synthesis of all religions. It will be, you cut one of my hand and one leg of Krishnamurti and the head of Meher Baba and put them on together and call it synthesis of all religions. It will not be of any use. It will stink. It will be ugly. That's what Mahatma Gandhi has done. No synthesis is possible, and no synthesis is needed. No synthesis is needed between a rose bush and the lotus. They are perfectly beautiful as they are. Lotus is lotus, rose is rose. Islam is Islam, Hinduism is Hinduism. Zen is Zen and Sufism is Sufism. Judaism is Judaism and Jainism is Jainism. They are perfectly beautiful as. They are not lacking anything. Each system is complete. Now this woman gathered from everything. And each time she will go to a new school, of course, whenever a new recruit comes, the people feel very good. It proves that they are right. This woman has been to that master and that master and that master, and she has left, abandoned all, and now she has come to our master. So our master must be the highest master, the greatest master. So they all welcomed her and they recruited her and regarded it as a good thing and a sign of sanity and enlightenment. It was not sanity, she was going insane. And it was not enlightenment, she was getting farther away every day. But to know that, she had to come to a real master. Her inward state, however, was one of confusion. At length, she heard of a certain celebrated teacher, Imam Zafar Sadiq. Only a real master can be shocking. All others who are just pseudo are never shocking. How they can shock? You are their customers. They have to persuade you. They cannot shock you. They have to adjust themselves with you. In fact, they always say what you want to listen. They never say that which will be shocking, otherwise you will leave them. I know. I have been in contact with millions of people in this country. And because I went on shocking them, by and by they left. They were not here to listen the truth. They were here to listen their truth, and they have nothing. They have no truth at all. If they had truth, there was no need to come to listen to me in the first place. But they think that they have the truth. If they go to a pseudo master, he will just say the thing that they want to listen. He will accommodate himself to them. And whenever a master accommodates himself to you, beware, he is no master. Because if he is accommodating himself to you, how he can transform you? He is your follower. He is trying to console you. He cannot be a transforming medium. Transformation is painful. A master has to work with a hammer in his hand. When this woman came to Imam Jafar Sadiq and she went to him, he listened to her protestations and ideas, and then he said, return to your home. I shall send you my decision in a message. That's the way of the Sufis. They are very, very experimental people and very practical and down to earth. Rather than saying anything, he says, I will send a message. You go home. Because he must have seen the reality of the woman, that she is already too much confused. Saying anything to her will be confusing her more. Right now, nothing can be taught to her. Right now, she need not learn anymore. She has already learned enough. She needs unlearning. So he didn't say anything. Soon afterwards, the woman found a disciple of the Sikh at the door. In his hand was a package from his master. She opened it and saw that it contained a glass bottle, half full, with three layers of packed sand, black, red and white, held down by a thread of cotton. On the outside was written, remove the cotton and shake the bottle to see what you are like. She took the wedding out and shook the sand in the bottle, the different colored grains of sand mixed together, and all that she was left with was a mass of grey sand. Sadiq is trying to show her that you have become just a confusion. You have become mixed with all kinds of colors. And the result is that you are just grey. You don't have any color. And these three layers of sins are very significant. Sufis say there are three ways to God. Knowledge, love, action. Just as Hindus say, Jnan Marga, Bhakti Marga, Karma Marga. Because man has three faculties. The faculty of cognition, the faculty of feeling, and the faculty of action. Body is the source of action, heart the source of feeling, love, devotion, and the intellect the source of cognition, knowledge, knowing. Because of these three faculties in man, there are three doors, man can enter into the divine. Action is black because it is the lowest. Feeling, love is white because it is the highest. And between the two is the intellect, red. Intellect is painted as red because it is very aggressive, bloody. It has the color of the blood. Heart is painted by Sufis as white because it is innocent, pure. White is the symbol of renunciation. You can ask the physicist. The physicists say that the color white means all the rays of the sun have been turned back. The black means all the rays of the sun has been absorbed. The red means only the red is turned back. The green means only the green is turned back. Each ray of light has seven colors. If a certain thing absorbs all the colors, it becomes black. If a certain thing renounces all the colors, it becomes white. So black is indulgence, white is renunciation. Love is sacrifice, love is renunciation. When you love, you are ready to give all. By giving, you become white. Intellect is very aggressive, always in the fighting mood, argumentative, hence the color red. Action is the lowest. body rooted. But all these three doors are there. Three layers of sand in the bottle. The bottle is half filled. And the master said, remove the wedge, shake the bottle, and see what happens. That is your situation. Something from the people who talk about love and live in love, and something from the people who talk about knowledge and live through intelligence, and something about the people who talk about action and live through action, and they all have become mixed into you. And now you have don't any color anymore. You are just a grace, a confusion. This must have been a great shock to the woman, because wherever she had gone before, everywhere she was welcomed. And everywhere they have told her, now she has become enlightened because she has chosen the right master. Now she has come to the right door. Now she has become sane. Up to now, wandering from here and there, she has been mad. She was recruited with great welcome, but Sadik has hammered her. He did not even feel it right to say anything to her. He sends a message, a very practical device to show her her state of consciousness. She is lost in the first valley. She could not go beyond the first valley. The story is of great significance. Many of you are lost in the first valley. If you want to go to the second, you will have to drop all rubbish that you have gathered in your mind. All kinds of thoughts you will have to drop. You will have to unlearn. Unlearning is the positive part. Through unlearning, you will have a new attitude arising in you. You will be less concerned with the known. You will become more concerned with the knower. And once you have dropped all your knowledge, it will be very clear to you whether it is action that is going to be your door, or it is love, or it is knowledge. What is going to be your door? Right now, you are a grace mass. Meditate over this story. And meditate over the seven valleys. Let me repeat again, man is a paradox. Man is the only being who tries to surpass himself. Man is the only being who has a great longing to transcend. This is man's glory, because this is God's gift to man, and this is man's anguish too. Now it depends on you whether you will make it in a blessing or in a curse. Enough for today.